Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
President Bush continues to not let facts get in the way of his ideology.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Above Politics Show. I'm Homer Fife.
And I'm Martin Bain.
Oh, hey, Martin. Duh. Oh, I'm sorry. That was a shoe being thrown at you.
What a good little lead into our first discussion point today.
So, what do you think of that?
Well, I have to say, I've seen some of the comment afterwards and some of the reports and interviews with Bush, and he seems not to understand the significance of what someone from a Islamic and a Muslim country means when they throw a shoe at you. I mean, from talking to friends who come from that part of the world, this is the worst kind of insult that they can deliver to you. And I think we can all remember when the that statue of Saddam Hussein was torn down at the start of the war, you know, and they had loads of local people banging it with their shoes, which is the ultimate form of insult. And I'm just staggered that George just seems to be sort of going, yeah, it was funny, actually. Yeah, the guy wasn't a bad shot. And I just think that's staggering. You know, President of the United States doesn't understand the implications of someone, an Iraqi journalist, throwing shoes at George W. Bush.
But do you think that it's he doesn't understand, or do you think maybe, Martin, he just doesn't care? You know, he has had so much controversy, and I think that what he wants more than anything else is just now to be left alone, to go to Texas, put all this behind him, and just get, I mean, he has had a presidency that has been marked by tragedies, by war, by an attack on American soil worse than any in history. Don't you think maybe he just wants to get it behind him?
I don't disagree with you on that one, but you'd think that someone might have advised him so that he could maybe be a little bit contrite when he actually comes on TV or when he's talking to somebody about this one, because I'm sure this is the fact that he sort of was almost dismissed the implication of the shoes being thrown at him is probably just going to throw more petrol on the fundamentalist fireplace, and they're just going to get more people who are just going to look and say, oh, look, here's the big Satan. He doesn't even understand the implications or the insult that that journalist put on him. And that's what staggers me a little bit, is you think a man, you know, if he's not the sharpest person in the closet, no worries. But you'd think he should have some sharp people around him who should really say, hang on a minute, you're running out of time. Yeah, but you still got to be a little contrite here.
Okay, but now let's look at it another way. How many people do you think have flipped George Bush off? How many people do you think have given him the finger a similar insult here in the United States?
Probably tens of thousands, probably millions. But I think the implication was this was in a much more public forum. I mean, you know, if George Bush comes through your local town and you happen to be standing there and you flick him the bird, you know, how many people are actually going to see it? I think the issue was that this was, this is an Iraqi journalist in Iraq at a press conference who, you know, took this step of saying, I'm going to throw my shoes. And I think because it was so public and because it is such a huge gesture, and I think flicking the bird used to have a much more, you know, sinister meaning, and I think its meaning has been diminished because so many people overuse it.
But now, here again, you're talking about adding fuel to the fire. I think that's what's happened in this case. I think that we, as a conspiracy site, have added more fuel to the fire, and I think that people are making such a big issue out of this simply because they hate George Bush. You've got one moron who dislikes George Bush in Iraq. Okay, I'll give you that. Out of an entire country, I'll give you one idiot who thinks so little of what George Bush has done for that country that he pulls his shoe off and he throws it. The difference is, and the thing that I equate this with and compare it to, is the fact that the Iraqi parliament met no less than four times last year, and every single time voted unanimously to request that our troops stay in their country. The democratically elected government of Iraq is requesting that we stay there. So what if we've got one reporter who feels so much about it he wants to throw his shoe? I don't care.
And I don't disagree with what you're actually saying there. I just think it, my gripe here is the fact that George Bush has not been seen to be contrite in any way or even acknowledge the fact of the huge insult that, you know, has been from a Islamic point of view being committed on George Bush, and the fact that, you know, millions or billions of people who are Islamic, who follow that faith, who are Muslim, will see that and, you know, and say, well, hang on, George Bush doesn't understand the implications of what's happened, and that'll probably say to a great many people, well, hang on a minute, he never understood how to handle our culture and our people after the invasion anyway.
I see your point. I agree with the way George Bush handled it. Just blow it off. The more serious that he takes it, and the more he would come out in reference to this incident, would just put fuel to the fire, in my opinion. I think that would just, he would make it more of an issue even than it is. My opinion. Again.
And I don't disagree with that. When you can, you know, we could argue this one for a huge amount of time. But one of the interesting things that's sort of related to all this, when I noticed that Secretary of Defense Gates has asked for plans to be drawn up to close Guantanamo Bay, and I'm sure there'll be millions of people across the world who are going, oh, it's going to close, and then I suppose we ought to be harsh and say, no, he's just asked for plans to close it. But I can only see that as being a potentially a positive step in maybe normalizing relations between the US and some parts of the world. And guess what, you've got to be thinking this is Barack Obama's influence here.
Okay, let's say, and look, everybody knows how I feel about Guantanamo. But let's ask ourselves this. Let's say they close Guantanamo Bay and they move all of these terrorist scumbags to Newark, New Jersey. What's next? Are we gonna come out and request that they close Newark, New Jersey? How about let's move them to Sing Sing Prison? How about to Alcatraz? Let's move them somewhere where we can keep them. But I'll tell you, it's going to be in somebody's backyard. And there's going to be a whole lot more BS about where they move these people to, because you got to keep them somewhere. And this stuff, like when I had the crossfire with Chisler, and he's like, send them home. Okay, let's say we do send them home. We send them to Qatar and we send them to Kuwait, and 80% of them wind up being tortured and beheaded. Now all of a sudden we're bigger demons than we were before, because we've sent them to a country that's going to kill them.
And I think that's certainly one logic, but I think many people around the world, and I suspect there are a significant number of people in the States who are uncomfortable with the processes that have been, you know, put the detainees at Guantanamo Bay have been put under, the fact that they're not subject to the same legal conditions and the legal privileges that a US citizen would be entitled to, and the fact that there's been a huge amount of secrecy, and you know, even people who have been sort of brought in by the military to act as sort of independent or even defense judges, even some of those people have spoken up and said this arrangement is just fundamentally wrong here. It seems
strange.
But
that's because people can't get it around their head. These people that are being, and I use the term people loosely, that are being held at Guantanamo Bay, and Martin, as you can tell, I have a lot of hard feelings on this. These people are not domestic criminals. They do not have the rights to our jurisprudence system. They do not fall under our Constitution. They are being held there exactly as what they are, war criminals. And I don't have any problem.
But then you could then turn around and say, what makes the difference between the person or the people involved in the bombing of Oklahoma City and the people that planned and drove planes or flew planes into the Twin Towers? What's the difference here? They're still both acts of terrorism. They're still horrendous. Why does one person, because they're an American citizen, get the right to be tried and ultimately executed under US law, yet someone else who, and I think the other area that I think gives a lot of people concern here, Homer, is the fact that, you know, where's the evidence? You know, I think with Timothy McVeigh, okay, I think there are people who would still turn around and say he was probably a patsy or whatever. But I just think it's the secrecy, or it's the closed door nature of the military tribunals in Guantanamo Bay that probably give most people cause for concern, when typically the U.S. is seen as a country that has a fairly open and transparent judicial system.
Right, but I can tell you what the difference is. The difference is the people that flew the planes into the World Trade Centers and the people in the Oklahoma Oklahoma City bombing and on and on and on, and the Unabomber. They are people that committed actual crimes on United States, in the United States. And I'm trying to get my wording correct here. They committed crimes in the United States. Henceforth, they fall well within our system of justice, and rightfully so. So they could be tried, they could be sentenced, and their sentences could be carried out here in the United States under our justice system. These people that are in Guantanamo Bay, they simply committed crimes or acts of war against the United States and or her interests abroad. They never committed crimes here in the United States. So what are we going to do? There are 270 some odd people that are being held there. Let's say we move them here. Okay, we move them to Sarasota, Florida, and we move them in with Mr. and Mrs. Jones, who live on First Street in Sarasota, Florida. And what are they going to put them in their spare room? See, that's the problem, isn't it? In order for us to close this place down, we either have to send them to their own homes where they're going to be tortured and killed, or we have to bring them even closer into the United States where they can potentially get loose, get free, whatever, and commit more acts of terror here in the United States. But I think they're just, this has just got all kinds of potential for disaster.
But if you sort of take what you've said, that maybe some of these people will be sent home to their countries of origins and they're going to be tortured and executed, if you take that, why are you actually going to care about that one? Because if they say go back to whatever country it is in Africa, in the Middle East, wherever, and those people decide to torture and execute them, surely you think, well, hang on a minute, that's one less terrorist we have to worry about, because no one can complain. We sent them home to a country that has a different set of laws and the way it handles criminals, and it said, fine, right, we're quite happy for us to torture and execute these people.
Oh, Martin, I love the way you think. I have no problem with that at all. But you know as well as I do that if we do that, if that is actually what happens, because let's face it, they're going to have to do something with these 270 some odd people. If that's what happens, can you imagine the outcry? Amnesty International, the American Civil Liberties Union, they'll be lined up with lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit. There'll be more controversy, and above top secret's top three threads will be the United States is guilty of more murder, and it's almost sickening when you
think. It is. And guess what? If you want to agree with what any of us have said, if you want to disagree with us, you know what to do. Find this show thread and post away.
Now, Martin, this, every time I read this, it just cracks me up, but there is a thread on Above Top Secret that's titled Making Inmates Pay for Food, about the Maricopa County Sheriff and his latest antics. Have you seen that?
I have, and this is a thread by Marked One, and I have to say, I like this one. I'm surprised that inmates don't have to pay for their food.
It's an interesting concept. One of the things that you hear all the time from the police is three hots and a cot, and that sometimes is the attitude with, especially with career criminals. Once they get into the system and into the prison, they literally don't have to do anything. I mean, they get three hot meals a day, they get television, they get workout rooms, apparently this Maricopa County sheriff is changing things when it comes to that.
I gotta say, isn't this the guy that made people wear, is it pink, and that makes them live in tents, and said that they can't drink coffee because it has no nutritional value and things like that?
That's him. He changed all of their prison uniforms to pink, and he feeds them bologna sandwiches. He makes them make their own meals. He has them living in tents. And the living in tent thing, I believe, is because of the overcrowding, which, as far as I'm aware, every prison in the United States is massively overcrowded. So I don't know that's a bad thing, except in the summertime, I'm sure it's very, very hot.
You know, the obvious answer to overcrowded prisons? String them up, electrocute them, jab them. because to me, I think, one of the cruelest things, I think that, if you have capital punishment, one of the cruelest things you do is you sentence someone to death, whatever. And then potentially they can stay alive for the next anywhere from maybe 5 to 20 years while that decision is sent, to this court, to that court, goes to the governor, goes to the Supreme Court, goes to here. And how many of those cases actually come back? The guy's taken off death row or he's released. I suspect a fairly small minority. So you basically keep this guy in suspense for anywhere maybe from 1 to 12 years. And then eventually one day say, guess what? It's all gone wrong. wrong for you, you're going to die tomorrow. I actually think that that's probably a more crueler punishment than just saying, hey, right, you've been sentenced. Tomorrow morning, we're going to do you.
Yeah, it's even more cruel than that, Martin, when you consider the fact that once they receive the death penalty, they are isolated in the prison system itself. They are not allowed to associate or to be in with the other inmates, so they get almost zero human contact except the guards that are there with them. So yeah, it's very cruel, and the simple fact of the matter is many prisoners on death row die of natural causes while their appeals process is going on, and even the ones that request to just be executed, and there have been historically a number that have done this, aren't allowed that request because the appeals process is automatic and mandated by most state statutes.
But that seems strange that you know I'm sure someone, you know, isn't it interesting how, you know, say maybe, you know, Amnesty International and other organizations don't jump on the fact that there are prisoners who are saying, look, I don't want to spend the next 12 years locked up in a little 12 by 16 or 16 by 16 room for 23 and a half hours a day, then I'm let out into a little courtyard on my own, and the only person I see are the warders. You know, I think it is interesting that no one's jumping up and down and saying, those guys who say kill me now, no one thinks that that's, you know, an invasion of their human rights and their civil liberties.
I actually had a debate at one point on Above Top Secret over this, and you also have to take into account, and I know it's a harsh way to look at things, but you have to take into account the dollar figure. It is far, far more expensive to execute someone than it is to keep them in prison for the rest of their natural life. Executing someone is a multi-million dollar proposition when you consider the appeals and the amount of court time, the legal defense that is required. I mean, because, you know, these attorneys aren't working for free. You know, the federal government or the state government, depending on the situation, pays their fees for representing these people. And when you consider the fact that this goes on for years and years, it's a multi-million dollar proposition where I believe the figure is $120,000 a year to keep someone in prison the rest of their life. So, you know, theoretically, or not theoretically, but for all practical purposes, it's cheaper just to give them life in prison.
Okay, well, if you want to find this thread, it is in Alternative Breaking News, and it's called Making Inmates Pay for Their Food, and it's by Member Marked One. So take a trip over there. You can flag it or you can add your comments. It's up to 4 pages of comments already, so seems to be a fairly interesting thread.
Yeah, now, I did want to talk about something real quick, Martin, over on your side of the pond. My wife is absolutely in love with the Jaguar, which I pronounce it Jaguar. She pronounces it Jaguar. I don't care how it's pronounced. But apparently, things are not all rosy with them either, or is it?
No, that's something I saw as well. Yes, this is Jaguar, depending on how you say, but it's also Jaguar Land Rover, because they Ford spun them out, and they were bought by a huge industrial conglomerate out of India called Tata, and there's now talk that Jaguar management have been to our Minister for Business, I believe, who is Peter Mandelson, who sits in the upper chamber, is one of our lords, saying that potentially they can't seek any funding or financial support from outside industry or from the financial institutions, and potentially they may want to come to the government to say, hey, bail us out. Which means that we're going to get into all the discussions about, you know, well, should we now be bailing out the UK automotive industry, which is interesting, because then it says, well, we have in the UK, we have a brand called Vauxhall, which is part of General Motors, and we also have Ford in the United Kingdom. I don't think we have a Chrysler operating in the United Kingdom, but they don't have any plants. So the interesting thing is, imagine if the UK government decided to bail out UK automotive companies and potentially bail out Vauxhall in the United Kingdom. Wouldn't it be funny if they bailed out the UK and maybe the European divisions, but headquarters in the States were just left to flounder?
Well, I think that one of the things that needs to be considered is this Tata, or I don't know how
Tata,
to pronounce
Tata. It. I suspect, from memory, they call themselves Tata, but they are a very substantial Indian corporation. You know, they are certainly one of the major industrial powerhouses in India.
Yeah, so let's look at it this way. India is arguably one of the fastest growing economies on the planet. I've actually heard rumor that they will eventually surpass China economically. economically. So they are definitely in the running for being one of the economic powers that would overshadow the United Kingdom and or the United States eventually, maybe not in our lifetime, but down the road somewhere. Now, is it in the best interests of the United Kingdom to step up and bail out one of the largest companies in one of the largest economic powerhouses? I mean, what could be the long-term effects on that?
Well, I've got to turn around and say my view here is I don't think you do save companies. I'm sorry. I'm, you know, we have, you know, a huge retail outlet called Woolworths who are about to close all their 800 stores by the 5th of January. Potentially, you know, up to 25, 30,000 people are going to lose their jobs. That is tragic. Yeah, and, you know, but I have to turn around and say, but hang on a minute, these are businesses. Their management made decisions, obviously didn't make the right decisions. It's like, you know, the bailout of the banking industry. I fundamentally disagree with it. Let them fail. These guys made appalling decisions, yet we are expected to bail them out. The question I think, and you and I have touched on it here, Homer, is if you bail out one sector, where do you stop if you bail out, you know, for example, in the States, you know, you bail out the automotive industry. In the UK, we bail out the automotive industry. Great. Then the construction industry comes crying and saying, look, hang on a minute. There are, you know, in the US, there are 14 million people employed in the construction and related industries. Oh, okay, so we'll have to give you a bailout. And then it just starts going down and down and down. I've got to turn around and say, if these companies can't run on their own, you've got to let them go. The other issue I have is that Tata is a very large a global corporate organization. To my mind, I think they got Ford and Jaguar, they got Land Rover and Jaguar, sorry, at a good price. Guys, you know, I think Tata ought to stand up to the plate and say, we bought these companies, we're going to have to look after them and not come begging to my government for more of my hard-earned taxpayers' money.
I agree, and I think that this entire bailout thing, which of course began with our Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and the subprime lending, it's become and it has snowballed. And I believe that when this thing first started, I made a comment about that on one of our shows. Exactly what you're talking about, Martin. Where does it end? Where does it end? When are we going to? At what point do we get that starting a small business or a business of any kind stops being a risk? Because if I know the United States government or the government of England or the government of India or any government is going to step in and save my sorry butt, then why shouldn't I start a business? Heck, I'll start a business tomorrow, because if I start to flounder, I'll just hit the government up for some money.
Absolutely, and I think that's a very valid point. And I know one of the things you mentioned was you'd also gone and spoken to Honda and Toyota to see if they would like to comment on the proposed, and we have to say proposed, and it has being canned once already, the bailout in the US, but you were trying to talk to Honda and Toyota as to see what they might think of this.
Yes, I did. I kind of went the mile with this. I thought it was interesting because I was putting myself in their position and thinking, okay, the United States government's stepping up here and they're bailing out their interests, but what about the Toyota plants here in the United States that are working on non-union labor and the Honda plant? So Honda sent me back a very nice little email that they weren't interested in making any on-air comments, and that was fine. But I actually got to speak to one of the economic advisors with the Toyota Corporation, and his comment to me was, are you serious? And when I assured him that I was and that we would love to have his views, he told me in no uncertain terms that they had no intention of making any comments on anything involving the bailouts. So that's where we got with that.
Very strange, isn't that? Very strange. And we're getting close to the end of the show, but the other one is that I also asked the European Central Bank for an interview and got a very nice email back saying that because of their current commitments, they were unable to put anybody up for interview. And yeah, I suppose from being from a UK perspective and thinking, hang on, here's the European Central Bank, they won't even talk to somebody from the United Kingdom, just probably goes to reinforce a lot of opinions that, yeah, okay, I have, and I suspect a significant number of people in the United Kingdom have over anything to do with Europe, and just thinking, well, hang on a minute, here's the European Central Bank won't even be bothered to talk to, you know, an alternative media organization, or maybe won't talk to someone from the United Kingdom. So, you know, I just thought that was incredible. Funny as well, and I'm sure there are going to be people who are going to disagree with my viewpoint on Europe. You know what to do.
Yep, send us an email or U2U, and we'll argue with you, but we'll listen to what you got to say.
Yep, and then we will also, to wrap the show, We will be having a rant from Homer. I think we're going to leave this one as a surprise for this week.
It's going to be a good one, though, trust me.
And we're breaking with tradition, or even creating a new tradition here. We're going to be putting out a special edition later on this week, and Homer had the opportunity to talk to ATS member Gautu about constitutional issues in Canada and why the Prime Minister of Canada asked the Governor General to shut down Parliament. So we have a special with one of our members on that.
And it was an absolutely fascinating interview. Gautu is very politically savvy and very knowledgeable on it. And I think that if you're interested in this at all, because it is kind of a crisis. I mean, they basically shut the government down. They said, that's it. Stop. Go home. So it's fascinating.
So, yes. If you want to have a listen to that, that will be going out as a special edition. And I just want to say thank you very much for listening to the Above Politics Show. I have been Martin Bain.
And I'm still Homer Fye.
And we'll see you next time on the Above Politics Show.
Hello, everyone. This is Homer Fife, and as you may notice, we're having a little party here at the studio. See, my partner, Martin Bain, and I, we're the hosts of the Above Politics Show here on AboveTopSecret.com. Along with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous with the ATS Mix, and Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock with the BTS Mix, we have made it extremely easy for all of you to subscribe to every one of our shows. On each show thread, you will now find two shortcuts where, when you click them, will magically transport you to a place where you can either download the shows with iTunes or with our RSS feed. Remember, your subscription helps us bring our intelligent community to the entire world. So come on, join all of us and deny ignorance with the ATS Mix Show with Johnny Anonymous and Dave Rabbit. Get in there and deny boredom with the BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock. And of course, deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and, yep, me, Homer Fife. Come on, be part of the revolution, the Above Network, LLC. This is Homer Fife, and this is just the way I see it. Guantanamo Bay. Yeah, I know. Quite a few of you are probably tired of this topic, but it's a hotbed item, and more needs to be said. And you know what? I'm just the person to say it. First and foremost, get off your high horses. We know that those of you taking the supposed moral high ground here, you are so very transparent in your actions and your intent. For all of you that are crying these alligator tears about the picture taking at Gitmo being an atrocity or the waterboarding, well, you're the very first to get in line and cry even louder if this administration had not locked these animals up and these same animals had perpetrated even more terror or military actions against this country. You would be first in line screaming that George Bush hadn't done this and George Bush hadn't done that. Look, we know. Okay, we've heard it all. Not all of you, of course. No, there's a small amount of you that just flat out hate the military. Well, you do now, because they're over there fighting so that you don't have to get out of mommy's basement and actually do something yourselves. Not that you would anyway. Yeah, that's right. I'm sick of those threads that talk about the soldiers being terrorists. You know, if you'd have gone somewhere and done something, then maybe you would have the right to stand up and spout this stuff. But anyway, back to Gitmo. These animals, not people, animals that we have in Gitmo, they took up arms and they fought against our war on terror. They fought against us. That makes them, guess what? Enemy combatants. Not criminals, not dope dealers, not thieves. They haven't committed crimes in the United States. They do not and should not have our availability to our justice system. They are prisoners of war and are being treated exactly as they should be. Of course, you know, after all of your misinformed tripe and rabid postulations that I've read these last few weeks, I'm leaning towards supporting Obama closing a Gitmo. Yeah, let's go ahead and close it. And you know what I suggest? I suggest they place these animals in your states, preferably very close to where you live. so that when they escape, they can come to your house for the aid you so desperately want to give them. You can invite them in. Give them food. Give them clothes. I'm sure you'll love that. Most of you have never been in combat, and you have no idea, not a clue. Heck, most of you that are complaining have not even stepped up and served. Yet, we that have, we support your right to complain. How do we support that? With our service, with our actions. Probably committing acts that if you knew what we had done, you'd condemn us as well as the people that are serving in Gitmo. So go ahead, shut it down. At least I'll be able to say, I told you so. And you know what? I will. This is Homer Fife, and that's just the way I see it.
You've been listening to the Above Politics Show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at abovepolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics Show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.